everybody. Welcome to the workshop session of the Port of Astoria Board of Commissioners, September 17th. Calling a meeting to order. Roll call, please.
Commissioner Hill.
Here.
Commissioner Spence.
Present.
Commissioner Rome.
Here.
Commissioner Campbell.
Here.
And Commissioner Stevens.
Here. Please join me in pledge allegiance.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Are there any changes or additions to the agenda? Hearing none, we're moving on to public comment. This is an opportunity to speak to the commission for 3 minutes regarding any topic in person. Those wishing to speak must fill out a public comment form. Those participating via Zoom may raise their hand during the public comment period. Anyone on Zoom today?
Not on Zoom.
Thank you. We have an advisory item. We're continuing our customs and border protection update. Where we are, I think most of us here know that we hosted a Zoom meeting last Thursday, and unfortunately here the internet went down and we really couldn't host that meeting like we wanted to with several participants. Fortunately, we were to assemble a group of people that were nearby, Bruce Conner, Deanna, myself, Commissioner Campbell, Todd Ranta from ILWU, and David Reed from the Chamber of Commerce were able to assemble here. And we did talk things over, update each other on what our research had found. David Reed had a lot of interesting information on impact of the cruise ships and customs charges and personnel changes that are impacting the port. He crafted some notes on the impact on the community. They were very useful. Deanna made minutes on that part of the meeting, and she did have a discussion with former Senator Betsy Johnson as well. Those minutes are public information. They're available if anyone, any commissioner hasn't seen them and wants a copy, you can do that. So where are we? There's no point, I don't think, in hashing all the information over again. If any of you are in the dark or any of the commissioners need a restart on, we can do that. But I'd like to get an update from the staff on where we stand now. Did Congresswoman Bonamici go to the Commissioner of Customs?
Yeah, so a few things. I guess first I want to apologize to the group. I'm not gone very often. I'm not sick very often, but I couldn't make it in that day, unfortunately. I wish I could have been there. Since that meeting, I've done a fair amount of work on this and had communication at various levels. I'm not going to kind of rehash the whole history of this, but one of the real challenges that this situation presents is the fact that this is a bit unique to the Port of Astoria, not in necessarily the problem itself, but the scale of the problem, and that, you know, we are not an embarkment port, and the volume of vessels we get through here is low. And so this same issue at larger ports does not present the same challenges that it does here at Astoria, and in particular when it comes to labor. It's unique in the sense that we would be required to have labor come out of the Portland-Vancouver area that the port would be financially responsible for. So I guess first step, I did talk with Espen Swanson from Congresswoman Bonamici's office that next morning, and was informed by Espen that Bonamici's office has been in contact with CBP And initially, the response from CBP was sort of a thank you, we appreciate the information you provided, and we'll note that, to which Congresswoman Bonamici pushed back on, and they have an in-person meeting that I don't believe has happened yet, but it is upcoming. And so I had asked ESPN if there was anything at this time that the port could do, or those that are that were involved in the ad hoc committee, or others who, you know, this substantially impacts. And according to ESPN, at this time, he said, just take kind of a wait and see approach. Let us meet with them. And as soon as we meet, I will get back with you and we'll talk about next steps. I've also been in communication several times now with former Senator Betsy Johnson, who obviously was part of the group as well, to kind of solicit some advice from her. And she was kind of the same mind that working through Bonamici's office would probably be the most effective. Between Director McGrath and I, we've also been in contact with both Wyden and Merkley's offices as well. Merkley's office has been a little bit more engaged on this through Gustavo Guerrero, but we have communicated to Ree Armitage through Wyden's office as well. And so at this point, I'm waiting to hear back from ESPN as to the results of that meeting. But I think, you know, our efforts here locally have definitely had an impact. The fact that we had so much support from different groups, different entities and individuals, I think had an impact. And so the fact that we were able to get that information out, get that back to CBP, and along with that have legislative push, I think is going to have an impact. I asked ESPN about timelines, and he wouldn't really commit to anything at this point. So my hope is here in the next week or so, I will hear back from ESPN. And if it's less than great news, we'll at least be able to devise a plan going forward to how to respond based on the result of the meeting.
Very good.
Bruce Connors is here. Maybe we should. Do you have anything you want to talk about?
This is excellent news. I was unaware, and I'm just delighted to hear this. This is exactly what we've been. This is a strategy, and I'm just really happy with you guys being able to get through. So we talked. We did kind of a change of strategy a little bit, and this is. I'm willing to sit and wait. And find out which one. And my whole hope was that CBP, and I talked to these folks, that one of our congressmen or our senators would talk to them directly. This is great news. I mean, this is a big day for us today, so we should celebrate. But I'm very happy about that. But the other thing I need to get to that, I'm exploring other ports on the East Coast that have the same situation and see how CBP interacts with them and how they cover that to me. But I cannot find a port that has this unique challenge. And that was a bit eloquent when you said earlier. It is, this port has its own unique challenge, and it's, you don't do the volume, I'm just echoing your word, you don't do the volume. But, and the manpower we need to clear the size of ships is 15 minimum agents, and you're not going to get those unless somebody finds a way to support that on the CBB side. And it comes at expense. So that's all I have to say. I'm really happy.
Bruce, for the benefit of our guests here today, our time to play catch up, you mentioned at our sit down that we had after the failed Zoom meeting that we'd lost 9 ships. Is that still a number?
Yeah, still a number, and that's with the for this year, this fall, and there's 5 left in 2025. Well, our goal is to nip this as soon as possible, because the other cruise lines have made adjustments. Norwegian Cruise Lines has moved the Jewel to a Vancouver. It was Vancouver. What they're doing is they're moving the ships to Vancouver and skipping Victoria, or actually skipping Victoria altogether. You can clear in Vancouver, because there's 2 U.S. Customs and in Vancouver. Victoria can't. So that's the issue. Norwegian is aware of it. They ship this Saturday. They know it's going to be four to four hours. And it's approximately 3,700 passengers delayed. So they're in here for 8 hours, and they're going to be delayed 3 to 4 hours, and they're aware of that. But our message to them is exactly which has happened, which we are now talking to CBP, and our congressman and our senator, hopefully all of them will have a conversation just to get their attention. And I am told Princess Cruise Line is waiting for that to happen because they're working with the CBP as well. And so this is a great big step for us.
You mentioned that Astoria has a low bar compared to all the other parks. What type of spread is that? Do you have any figures? I mean, is it really significant? Or
it's remarkable. Our average is 26 ships. It's been up and down. I think next year, because of cancellations, it's going to be somewhere around 17, 18. But around there. Victoria is 240. Seattle is right around the same number. San Diego, they're around 200.
Sure.
So all these, they're all in our group. And so Astoria, the whole group. Astoria, we have Eureka, Santa Barbara. These are all the small
groups. How big is that spread, though, between Santa Barbara and Eureka, for example?
Oh, so Eureka has zero ships this year. Santa Barbara does not want the business, but they have in the same. They have the same as we do, right around 20, 26 is their average as well. They don't have a dock. They all go to tender. So it was just so the big cities subsidize little Astoria and Eureka and Santa Barbara. So that answer your question?
Yes.
Right, thank you.
Further questions?
Thank you.
I'd like to add that question to the director. Any idea whether or not Customs intends to respond to our letter?
I can't speak for Customs. Obviously, we've had discussions at the local level, and we have, you know, at the federal level, we have help on the legislative side, but I would defer to them.
And another thing for the benefit of the group here, Todd Runta from ILWU asked for information that we had, and that was sent to him electronically so he can send it to San Francisco, the hub of ILWU on the West Coast, with the intention that ILWU in San Francisco will write their own letter to Customs, bringing attention to this problem. Unless there's further discussion, we'll move on. Thank you, Ms. Connor.
Well done. All right, I'll be excused. I gotta go.
We're ready to move on to our action items. On the Byproduct Recovery Center, we have a treatability study and a feasibility study. They are paired. You wish to take it?
I will go ahead and take this one. So,
thank you.
For item number two, seeking we have just the contract for the treatability study, or the feasibility study, that was approved by the Port Commission on August 20th, 2024. So, what we're looking at tonight is entering into a contract with Aquaterra Consultants for a treatability study. So this is something that is just as imperative as the feasibility study and dovetails with the feasibility study that the Port approved on August 20th. So the scope of work is a little different, where you're looking at, on the feasibility side, you're looking at the feasibility of the permitting, the constructability, where we're going to put the byproduct recovery center and those types of things. The treatability study is actually getting into the treatability side of the wastewater. So it is more digging into the details, taking samples, looking at what we can take from Bornstein, what we can take from DeYang, and how we can treat those byproducts and how we can use them. Now, one of the things that's interesting with this, when you start looking at one of the things we provided, is on page 7 of the packet. Over the last, we're looking at last 3 years, DeYang Seafoods has invested over $1 million into research and development and making sure that we can treat these byproducts and actually use them as something that is going to be a long-term and sustainable solution for the processors. Also, if you look at down the middle of the page, on page 7, Aquaterra Consultants has spent over $500,000 of its own money digging into these technologies to make sure that we have a long-term sustainable solution that goes beyond what DEQ is mandating and mitigating with the processors. So, and just as a little bit of a background, the Byproduct Recovery Center is something that is essential and something that is going to be kind of a potential pilot program for the rest of the state, in that what we can do here at the port is offer a single permit that would allow the processors to basically put their offal into a byproduct recovery center that the port could utilize and then turn into a sustainable product or products. So this is something that is not yet permitted by DEQ, but this is part of what the feasibility study and the treatability study are looking to solve, is the ability to get DEQ on the same page when it comes to a sustainable fishery and sustainable wastewater processing for the processors. So what we're looking for tonight is approval by the commission to approve the contract with Aquaterra Consultants. This is Alan Isman. Alan Isman is here tonight, along with Abby Isman. They've been working with DeYang for a number of years down here to innovate. This is something that's been really imperative when it comes to talking, setting a new tone and a new standard for the seafood processing industry, is coming up with technology that goes beyond what DEQ is mandating. So, for example, DEQ has mandated that Bornstein Seafoods purchase a DAF system. So this is a system that really is turning a lot of potential resources into a toxic sludge that that don't necessarily need to be that way. There's another way and other ways to go about it. So, and that's what Alan Isman at Aquaterra Consultants is researching, has been researching for a number of years. And so, you know, part of the process here is to get through these samples to show what can be produced and what we can use from the DeYang and Bornstein's and turn into a reusable product rather than toxic sludge. So, you know, it's important to note here that there's a lot of private investment that is going into this. It goes beyond what DEQ is requesting. It's not that these people are looking to get around permit requirements and get around restrictions. They're looking to innovate in such a way that they can use every bit of the wastewater process and the wastewater in the process to turn it into a reusable product. So again, with that, just looking for approval from the commission to enter into a contract to do the treatability study with Aquaterra Consultants for $80,000 with the results looking to be provided kind of in tandem with the feasibility study at the end of this year and the beginning of next.
I think you worded a motion, so I'll say so moved.
We need to start with the treatability study approval first. So
okay.
That's where we're at. Let's look at page 2. Staff is asking the commission to approve the treatability study scope with ATC and begin work immediately. Questions for the staff? Well, I need a second. You already made a vote. Do we have a second?
Second. Question.
Yes, sir.
Isn't Scholar already processing waste products?
They are, but it's not after, it's not from the water. It's more direct product, direct waste product.
Right.
Not from the
not
stick
the
water, not from the water. Different process.
Okay.
We but it might smell bad.
It smells bad.
Well, that's a serious problem.
Yeah.
The community is not happy, but I don't want to go any further down that road. We're working on it. Further questions? Discussion?
We have people from Aquaterra here. I don't know if they want to say anything, just because.
Oh, did you want to say anything?
Bother to show up.
Feel free, come on up, yes.
I just want to confirm that we're looking at the wastewater coming out of the plants, not the solid waste, the water.
Name by the record, please.
Oh, I'm sorry. Alan Hismond, Aquaterra Consultants, sorry about that. We're looking at recovering solids from the wastewater that we throw into the Columbia River. There's thousands of pounds of usable product in there. We want to be able to recycle it as fertilizer, organic compost, or using worms to digest the solids that we recover. There's no smell. It kills all the bacteria in the process we're looking at. And we have a whole system set up, pilot system set up at DEA for the last 3 years. So I've proven the technology works. Now we're just looking to see how we can build the technology for three plants at once. So they can all discharge to one treatment center. If for each plant they have their own treatment system, it's millions of dollars. If you combine them together, it's a lot more cost effective than having three separate systems. And the expertise needed to run those systems, it'll be easier having a central system here and have center employees there than every plant having their own experts in running wastewater treatment systems. So, as Matt mentioned, that Bornstein's been forced into buying a dissolved air flotation unit. They only work if you use toxic chemicals. If the water gets clean, but you produce toxic sludge, like you don't only go to landfill. Our system, we don't produce toxic sludge, we don't use dangerous chemicals, and we recover a useful byproduct. The nitrogen we're pulling out of the wastewater can be combined with wood waste to make compost. The compost we put back on forests or farmland, we use leachate, groundwater filtration. It's a broad-reaching project that interlaces a number of resources in the state and comes up with some positive solutions.
So if I heard you correctly, you say this is working already at the Yang.
On a pilot level, yeah.
On a pilot level, yeah. So.
DEA's been kind enough to give me their mezzanine for the last 4 years or 5 years. And I've had put a lab in there and some test units, and we've been running it for the last 3 seasons. It's taken a while because there's so many combinations of fish only, shrimp and fish.
Yeah.
We can't predict what, where, but so we finally rented a townhouse here. I'm living in Warrington this year and next year. Because the community was horrible. Couldn't call it. Change the night before running tomorrow. Yeah, we'll be right down. So we've been living in Warrington, very happy about that, and very nice town you have here. And we have all the information we need. I've been doing this for almost 50 years, working in the food and seafood industry. I've got a degree in chemical engineering, and I've worked all over the seafood industry from California all the way up to Alaska. I've seen plants that are like 6,000 gallons per day to 6 million gallons per day. So the plants here are mid-sized. We should be able to cost-effectively recover the resource, decrease the amount of nutrients going into the Columbia River, and finally tell DEQ this is best available technology. Unless they can tell me otherwise, we're going to implement the best available technology. And so that's what we want to do. The reason why we have to do treatability, feasibility is telling you where can we build it, how big is the building, what equipment do we need. Without the treatability, you can't do something else. Treatability will tell you how to manage the flows, what equipment do you use to process the wastewater, and then the other consultant will flush it out into a capital operating and equipment cost.
Yeah. Questions?
Well, thank you for coming. I think that's fascinating.
Thank you for listening.
Thank you.
Absolutely.
We have a motion on the floor and a second. Further discussion? All in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Any opposed? Unanimous vote. We'll move on to the second half. Thank you for explaining it much better than I could. We approved the treatability study. We're going to now talk about the feasibility study. And page 8. We you'll find a little bit of information about that. Special Public Works Fund Planning Project Financing Contract.
So commissioners, as Commissioner Stevens pointed out, starting on page 8, you have a copy of the contract through Business Oregon. This is actually a grant award that we had been notified of here a while back. I can't remember if it was a month or 2 months ago at the commission meeting, and the commission had approved acceptance of the grant, but I had let you know that we did not yet have the actual contract. It was lagging behind the actual award letter.
Right.
And so in front of you today is a copy of that contract. The total project cost of $80,000, and this is a grant amount in the amount of $60,000. And as Commissioner Stevens also pointed out, this is from the Public Works Planning Fund through the state of Oregon. So we're asking for your approval of this grant contract in the amount of $60,000.
I think we can take that for any of you.
So moved.
Thank you.
Second.
We have a motion and a second. Discussion.
This is just the financial part or the logistical part.
Where's the other 20K again?
Matt's gonna pay for it.
So the 25% match, that's the port's obligation.
Okay, so we are obligated for that. I'll make that clear to everybody here.
Is that the port's obligation or is that gonna be the contractor over here?
No, the 25% is the port's portion, the state's paying for 75%.
Okay. Further discussion?
Generally, I understand that it's easier for the port to be the lead on this, not just because it's coordinating three different port tenants, but that as the entity, the port has a legal structure that makes it more viable, is that correct, to apply and receive these sorts of grant funds to do this sort of work?
Correct, I think that's true, and then also just eliminating redundancy. It doesn't make sense for each individual customer to be sort of going down their own path. The more that we can consolidate and have the port in a role that we're in right now that, as you say, could potentially put us in better position to get grant funding and then sort of coordinate the process, I think the better.
I think in terms of supporting economic development, as the port, this is the best possible example of how port can work with and help support private industry in our community.
Excellent point.
Yeah. And going back, if you look at our mission, there's really only two things in our mission. It's to be an economic generator and be good stewards of the environment. And I would say that projects like these really help satisfy both.
I actually spent some time and read through that, and it's a lot of boilerplate legal stuff, but there are some rules you have to follow, and as long as you do that, it's sounds good.
Sure. We have a motion on the floor. We already had one.
Oh, you did?
Yeah, in a second. So we're in discussion, and if there's no further discussion, all in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. None opposed? Unanimous approval. We're going to move to commission comments now. Item 8. Let's start off with Commissioner Campbell.
Yeah, I noticed they're hauling a lot of trash over there dumping for that runway. How long is that going to last?
Should be over pretty quickly. It's just Recology.
Pardon?
It's the Recology project, so it should be over quickly.
Is that about it? Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're making a mess over there. What are we going to do with it next? Wear it out moving it, but that's we should shut that off. That's not a good thing we're doing here.
Anything else, Commissioner?
I think that's it.
Thank you. Commissioner Rome?
Yeah, we already discussed the CVP update, and we had some logistical challenges. I guess the internet went down, and I wasn't sure if the audiovisual was working. The county spent a lot of public dollars to build the guy. rather than spend more money than we need to on something we don't, that's already available, provided for by tax dollars. Again, the justification when I was on the commission for investing it was that it would be a community asset, so I think we would fall under that umbrella as part of the community. That's my two cents.
Thank you.
Commissioner Stevens, could I comment on that real quick?
Yes, sir.
So this is something that I've been working on more recently. We actually, when we moved everything over from the Pier 1 building into this room for our commission meetings, as a part of that, we had solicited bids for audio video for this room, and the bids that we received were over $40,000, and I just couldn't justify that expense. And so we, to Deanna's credit, we've been kind of hobbling things along as best we could here in the meantime. One of the real challenges nowadays is post-COVID, there's a requirement of these public meetings that we offer both the in-person as well as the online option. So that's where the real difficulty comes. The audio video works much better if either everybody's online, or of course if everybody's in person, it's much easier. And with a room this size, we need very little, if any, sound amplification. And so the challenge, like the meeting that was had last week, outside of the connectivity and internet issues, or when you have folks offsite and they're trying to hear what everybody in the room has to say, and then also for everybody in the room to be able to hear what's being said through the video monitor. So I did last week have a fairly long conversation with Brandon Wilson. He's done work for the port in the past. He actually used to work for iFocus. Now he's in charge of audio, video, and IT for the courthouse here in town. And so I explained to him the situation. I explained to him sort of the scope, the size of the room, and the challenges we've had with the bids we've received. And so he's working on some things and putting together a package of hardware and software that he thinks could possibly satisfy our issues at a much lower cost. And so I'll be getting back with him hopefully by late this week to see if there's something we can do that's not kind of the full-blown $40,000 option, because we don't need to run concerts or anything in here or have super high quality video audio based on a room of this size, but we need something better than we have. So I am working on it. We just don't quite have a solution. And of course the move here from Pier 1 happened fairly quickly as we had a tenant ready to go. So I want to thank Deanna for making it the best we can here in the meantime, but we are working on a long-term solution.
I did have something. I was a sound person in an analog area, pretty digital, and if every commissioner had a jack where you were able to wear headphones and a microphone, it might not look too good on Zoom, but it would be highly functional in terms of being able to hear what people are saying on the screen and being able to speak without creating a feedback loop.
Okay.
Thank you, Greg. Thank you, Commissioner. Commissioner Spence.
I don't have anything.
Commissioner Hill?
Me as well.
Okay, to update you all, we've already talked about the attendance at the ad hoc meeting. We're hosting State Representative Jabadi on the 27th of September. That is still on. And I hope that commissioners will choose to attend that. If we do, we'll just do like we did with Representative Weber when she was a representative. We'll manage the rules about three or more commissioners getting together.
Where would that be held?
Here, right here. Yeah, we'll probably have a working lunch. You know, just like this. We're using almost the same agenda as we did, just to introduce the representative to the Port of Astoria. He's never spent a day with us. Giving him a tour, such as it is, the port property, and finishing up with the airport.
That'd be 27.
Yes, 27.
Jordan Stevenson's what? 27.
Correct, September. Deanna, is that 9:30 start time, 8:30, I forget.
8:30.
8:30 start time. And of course, we'll begin with coffee just like we did previously, and get commissioners a chance to express your own concerns in person with the representative.
Did all of you get a letter from his daughter in the mail?
Yeah.
That was pretty sweet.
Yeah, I got that. And that's all I have to report. We're ready for executive director comments.
Thank you,
Director Isom, anything you left unsaid?
There's a lot though. Just hit a few things here. I guess the first one, an update on Pier 2. So there's a few different things going on here. One of the big items in the pre-construction phase before we can get through permitting is going to be the mitigation required for the project. And so the port had a conditional use application in front of the City of Warrenton Planning Commission last week for a portion of our property out on the Skipanon that was ultimately denied by the Warrenton Planning Commission. And so we're currently working with our consultant, Will Kaplinger, on an appeal process that will be heard by Warrenton City Council. We're disappointed in the result, but I think we have good reason to be confident that ultimately this will get approved, but it may take a little more work than we had initially thought. And so we are working towards that end. Additionally, our maintenance crew had done a bit of routine observation and inspection yesterday morning and had observed that there were some portions of the west end of Pier 2, which we know is in bad shape, that had degraded more quickly than we might have expected. And so out of extreme caution, we did get a hold of P&D engineers yesterday afternoon. And we're able to actually get them out here this morning just to get eyes on it, to make sure that there wasn't a significant issue or a safety issue. And so Ryan is working. We've kind of preliminary spoke with him, but he's working on a report to give us about some interim measures that we can take as we wait to get through all this pre-construction stuff and ultimately get the actual project started. Just to ensure the safety of all the workers out there and visitors. I have been in contact with both the Yang Seafoods and Bornstein to let them know. I actually called them yesterday after I had heard back from maintenance just to let them know what we had observed. And at this point, there was no action on their end to take, but that we would be having an engineer. And based on the follow-up report, we will come up with some solutions which may impact their operations a bit, but hopefully we can do some things that aren't going to interrupt things too bad. Luckily, the season is winding down a little bit, so the amount of traffic out there is going to be lessened. But we want to make sure that as we go through this process, knowing that it is in poor condition, but if not at the level that is going to put folks in peril. So we are working through that as we speak. A couple other quicker notes here. This is kind of an old one that was approved a while back by the commission, but it's finally going to get started. Is the Rivian company, starting next week, is going to start their install of the charging stations at the parking lot where Journey's Inn sits. So it'll be on the south end of the parking lot. And so as part of that project, you'll notice there'll probably be some barriers put up as they work on getting those charging stations installed. And so I know a number of folks in town have asked me about this. I know we have a commissioner who drives a Rivian as well, so I think there's some excitement about getting these stations here in town. We had our final audit last week, which is a little bit early compared to what it normally is. They were out here for interim about 3 weeks ago, and then 2 weeks later came out for final. Usually there's a bit of a gap in between. So the good news with that, so far, the audit has gone well. I don't think there's a lot of unexpected things that have come up, but we're tentatively scheduled for our workshop in October to have a presentation from the auditors to present year-end results and go through the audit report I know they were also planning on talking to the commission president and the treasurer. I think that's tomorrow, correct? So they'll conduct those interviews. We're about a month away from having that all wrapped up, and so I want to thank Melanie for that, getting that done, and especially as the holidays approach, it'll be nice to kind of have that in the rearview mirror and to have it completed. The deadline for that is December 31st, and usually we're running up against the clock, not as much because of the port. A lot of times these auditors are stretched pretty thin, and so they're trying to make sure that everybody gets in before the closing bell on the 31st, so we are thankful that we can get that done, hopefully by Halloween. And then I think a couple commissioners had noticed there was a solicitation that we had published for an invitation to bid for the demo of what remains of the East Basin Causeway. That's actually not in our current budget, but we wanted to get that invitation out there. We have a pre-bid meeting coming up next week, next Tuesday, and it's obviously at some point the work needs to get done, but it's also some fact-finding to figure out.
Demolition.
The demo of the causeway, correct, and figure out what that's going to cost so that we can get that budgeted for. We've heard kind of some wild variants in what that might cost, and so until you actually go out and get some bids coming in, you don't really know. So once we get that information, that will inform decisions down the road on how we get that work done. And then lastly, and this has been a topic I think I've talked about at every meeting for the last month or two, but we are spending a lot of time working on our hotel redevelopment expression of interest. We have Hopkin Real Estate involved with that. We also have John Southgate, who had participated in the master planning process with the port and the city. And again, in October, we expect to have that in front of the commission and hopefully can get that out and get some interested parties in here for some tours and ultimately look to move forward with that project. So that's exciting news, and it's taken a lot of work to get to this point, but we're closing in on a final draft that, again, I think will be in front of the commission in October. So that's my update.
Questions for the director?
It's disappointing that the Warrington Planning Commission turned down our request for the shipping on property because, as I understand, it's 1 square mile, which is, 265 feet of square. Any indication of why? Because it's not usable. I think what I read is they felt that it might be of use to them for future development.
I think you hit the nail on the head. I don't know, it's my opinion, nothing more than that, but that I was on the Planning Commission and the County Commission, sat through some little projects that were proposed, and you have to, any approval or denial has to be justified in legal terms. And I don't know if they've met that. So I believe that the court will prevail. It's just a question of how long it takes. It's a conditional use, so the process requires that process takes place in that order.
Sure.
I was at the meeting, and I certainly did not agree with some of the conclusions that the staff advisor was coming up with. I'll leave it at that.
I think that there is a fundamental misunderstanding of how compensatory mitigation works.
Thank you.
From the city.
Further questions?
Just one thing on my mind, Director, here too. Have we had a boat in the water yet to take a look at it?
Yes.
Okay, what was their report? Again, if you don't mind repeating it.
Yeah, so the maintenance team was in the water. They were in the water Monday morning taking a look. And then same thing with the engineer this morning. He came out here and actually was climbing under the pier to get eyes on it, pictures, that kind of thing. So sometimes, it's a safety is monumental, especially with what we've seen here on the waterfront with failures. And so But it can be, you know, sometimes visually things can look better or worse than they actually are. And so when, you know, I get that information from maintenance, it obviously raises concerns, and immediately I notify the tenants. But then we wanted to get an engineer out there with real expertise that could do a better evaluation to kind of let us know what the dangers might be, and if there were immediate dangers, what we could implement in the short term, knowing that we have a long-term fix on the way.
Yes.
And so we've had discussions today with the engineer, and we should know more here in the coming days.
Activity on the pier will diminish, but at the same time, the winter storms are on the way too. Yeah. Okay. Thank you. Further questions? Our upcoming meeting dates, regular session, October 1st, 4 p.m., and a workshop session, October 15th, at 4 p.m., right here in the same place. If there's anything further, we're going to adjourn.